Welcome to London Welsh Rugby Club Podcast. This is episode 45. Most of us at the club will be getting excited for the Grand Slam match this Saturday, and usually we would all be looking to congregate at Old Deer Park to watch it together. Not so this year, but we are on the path out of the pandemic, and society will be back to normal fairly soon, and there could be opportunities for us to get together before next season. As mentioned last week, the minis and the youth are back on Easter Sunday at the club. And who knows, if the Lions are touring in the UK, we may have opportunities to watch those matches at the clubhouse. My guest this week is someone I've got to know quite a bit across the last 3 to 4 years, as he's been helping coaching my youngest boy in the youth squads, as his boy plays in the same year. Now, I know he played for London Welsh, but boy, I didn't know how much he'd played for the club. It really is a family story, really, with his father being a player and then a club official, then our guest playing in the minis, the youth, the Colts, the Griffins, the Druids and the First 15. Playing senior rugby in the front row for London Welsh from 87 to 2000 just demonstrates what a great player he was. But more importantly, he's a top bloke. And I really enjoy talking to him about his time at the club and why we are more than just a rugby club. Our guest this week is Richard Thomas. Enjoy. This podcast is sponsored by London Welsh Developments. London Welsh Developments offer the entire range of services for all your home needs, from plumbing, electrical, joinery, and building and maintenance. Their many years of experience building all forms of extensions and conversions, the odd new build, and some bespoke garden rooms and home offices. You will clearly see the attention to detail and understanding of your home that is difficult to match. They really do care and want the best for your home with no stone left unturned. For more information, contact London Welsh Developments on 0208 335 9123 or email on info@lwdltd.co.uk. London Welsh Developments. Welcome to the pod, former London Welsh and Richmond prop, Richard Thomas. How are you, Barrel?
I'm not bad. Not bad for Sunday. Thanks.
I'm going to call you Barrel because everyone knows you as Barrel, but I don't even know where the nickname comes from. Where does the name come from?
I think it was a guy called Stuart Russell who used to play for London Welsh in the back row and the second row. And he said it to me in one match, like I wasn't pushing or something, and he was basically saying, "I'm overweight, you know, you barrel-shaped thing. You should be doing your work up front." And that was basically stuck from that. Yeah, but the barrel. Yeah, obviously I'm a thin thing these days, but that was a bit more rotund.
Yes, you've used lockdown wisely, shall we say? But how has lockdown been for you and the family?
I guess like everyone, quite boring. Work-wise, I've been busy, which I get. Well, it's good news because a lot of people haven't got work, have they? But it just seems there's no difference between weekdays and weekends now, is there? Just you're always at your desk, and it's quite hard work to mark a separation. But no, it's been okay. Like you, having the kids at home, homeschooling isn't ideal. They need to get out and do their stuff, don't they? And luckily they've gone back last week now, so I'm hoping that'll be the last time they're back. But even that went well, given they've been having to do their own stuff on remote learning, computers and things, are not ideal, but yeah.
Yeah, they need the social skills, don't they? They need that and team sports and all that sort of things, just to keep them active and off screens and just engage and debate, really, rather than being spoken at, I suppose, isn't it?
Absolutely. And just saying go out and do something doesn't work, does it? They've got to be, you know, dragged out and actually, you know, told to do things at school, and that actually, it works, you know, and missing rugby as well, London Welsh.
Yeah, it's a big part of our family's, you know, sort of Sundays, isn't it, really? And you know, we've missed it, I'm sure they have. But you say you talk about work, but you work in IT, I think. And I think before we was best recording this conversation, you said half of IT's problems are resolved by switching the computer on and off. So is that half of your work then?
There is a lot of truth in that. Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of things solved by restarting. But if that doesn't work, obviously you've got to do a bit more work then. But yeah.
A bit more digging around. Look, you know, you are looking well. And you know, we just want to, before we get to talk about your rugby journey with London Welsh, you were sort of had a surprise diagnosis a couple of years ago. You had cancer.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the details of it, but I think, you know, you certainly seem to have come through that. But it was quite a harrowing episode for you and the family for a while, wasn't it, Richard? Can you just let us know what that was and how your recovery's gone, if that's okay?
Yeah, that's no problem. I was diagnosed after having a long period of pains in my teeth, which I thought was, you know, obviously toothache or something like that. And I was getting pains above that in the, sort of the upper jaw. Eventually, I've diagnosed a cancer in the sinus, which is quite rare, I believe. And yeah, that was 2019. I think the 1st of June, I had the op, which is quite a big op, to take a bone, have my fibula removed from my leg to reconstruct the bones that they had to remove from the face, and they took the tumour out. I was in hospital for a bit longer than I should have been. I was in 5 weeks, actually, because I had an infection in my leg. So a few things went against me there, but eventually I got past that. Radiotherapy, didn't have to do chemo, which is good. And yeah, I was off work for about 6 months. Back to work. Things have gone well so far. Yeah, I've been having regular checkups and scans and other things, bits and bobs to do with my teeth that I had to remove in the operation. So there's a few things they're trying to tidy up. But the key bit, which is obviously, has the cancer come back? No, it hasn't. And they're keeping an eye on that. I think they're keeping an eye on that for about 10 years. But in the first couple of years, it's a checkup every quarter. So yeah, I mean, I'm quite fortunate really to be where I am.
Yeah, look, so you are looking well, and you know, I think, you know, the reason I bring this up in this conversation is how important the London Welsh family was in terms of the support you had during that 6 months, you know, for your missus and family. But you know, they were there for you, weren't they?
No, they were total pain. No, they were great. As we discussed before, there was a WhatsApp chat, and all the boys were on that rather than sort of pestering people directly. There was a group there, and they were great. They came to see me, and when I was out, they gave me lifts back up to hospital. And yeah, it was quite helpful. You know, it's I think some people sometimes when they got, you know, disease like cancer or something serious, that they kind of maybe try and hide it away or something like that. I know it's, you know, people have different ways of dealing with it. I sort of dealt with it this way, fairly open about what I had, and it helped. It definitely helped. You know, I think it's easier to kind of share the load, as it were. Yeah, great help.
No, good. Yeah. And actually, they've been a great help for me in getting a bit of juicy stories on new barrels.
Yeah, so, I bet. Yeah.
Some we can talk about, and obviously some we definitely won't. So, but look, you know, it's great to see you back on the feet. You've been, you know, at the club coaching and playing rugby as well still. But look, we're recording this on a Sunday after Wales have just won their fourth game in the Six Nations. What do you think of Wales yesterday, and how do you rate our chances against this French team next weekend?
Wales yesterday, I mean, they were great. It's hard to kind of compare when you're playing against Italy, isn't it? What kind of side Italy put out and how they play. I thought Italy would pose more of a challenge up front. They normally do. But in the first half, Wales were away, weren't they? They kind of got bogged down a little bit and probably could have scored more. But their back play, their interplay is great. How they do it next week against France, I think generally Wales, to me, seem like they're overachieving given the lack of depth of players they've got. And they play really well, especially when you look at their regional rugby is pretty dire, isn't it? You know, compared to, say, Ireland. So France were unlucky yesterday. Pretty good at the breakdown. Some star players there as well. I think if Wales can grind them down and keep the defence in there, they could win. But if you're a betting man, I think you'd probably go for a neutral betting man. You put your money on France, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think you would at home you would, but I think it seems like things seem to be falling in Wales's favour through the Six Nations. And you just think whether it's written on the wall for us to get a Grand Slam or not. I don't know. It's tough.
If you'd thought back to the autumn, where it didn't look good at all, did it? They're talking about Pivac not being around after that, and then suddenly it's looking a lot better. I think we're short of maybe a couple of people in the back row. Lydiate's gone, which I think that's a big loss. We've lost a big thumper there, haven't we? Good to see Navidi back, because he gets through so much work. I can't really criticise Wales, given the personnel they got and the number of players that they haven't got available. I mean, it's been brilliant.
You know, they were anxious. I think just like all the changes in the second half seemed to have sort of stopped their flow, and we just became less clinical. I think we could have put a lot more points on Italy, really, and we just didn't. And in tight matches, when you're not clinical, it matters, but it didn't matter yesterday because we'd won by half time, really. And so, but look, yeah, it's a make for an interesting week anyway this week, and you know, and it's 8 o'clock next week as well, so it should be a good Saturday night. You know, as we're all staying in still, so a couple of beers watching the rugby at home.
No, I'm looking forward to that, definitely.
So let's talk about your rugby journey. Your family have been involved in London Welsh. You've been brought up at London Welsh, it seems, by looking at the sort of notes I've got, right? So your dad's played here for years and has been a club official, right? So first and foremost, how is Edgar Thomas? Is he all right?
He's good. He's good, yeah. He's bored, like the rest of us. He's missing the rugby or live rugby down at the club. Missing the pub, that's for sure. but yeah, I think he just wants to get back to normality, like the rest of us. But he's well, thanks, yeah.
No, good. And do you remember, as growing up, you watching your dad play rugby?
I think I do.
Right.
Yeah, I can think I do. Obviously, I spent a lot of time at London Welsh. Basically, used to go down there with my dad. We lived in South East London, Beckenham Penge, where they still live now. And yeah, we'd drive across there, and he'd release me for the day, and I'd run around and play. And eventually, I'd come back when it's dark and find him in the clubhouse somewhere in the smoke, and then we go home. but yeah, I think I do remember in patches, because I was quite surprised in the notes you dug up. He said his last game was 77. So I actually texted him. I said, that must be a mistake. So no, he got called up, or not called up, filled in for someone who was missing. And he must have been sort of retired for a couple of years before that. But so, yeah.
Oh, it was just what a great upbringing for you. But you know, your dad, just so everyone knows, your dad sort of played for every squad bar the first, I think from 1963 to 1977, and captained quite a few. So, and you know, when Joe Jones, I texted Joe Jones, he said he was in the same team as Joe Jones when Joe Jones made his debut as well. So, lots of people will know Edgar from, you know, after he played probably in his roles within the club then, because he was like playing controller for the junior teams. Is that like the minis chair now? Is that what that is?
I don't really know, but all I can say is a Friday night in the house was phone call after phone call after phone call, basically trying to fit players in the games and who's available, and you know, a bit of a jigsaw of the junior team. So yeah, he was basically doing everything as far as I could see. But
So all the selections for the playing squads then, because obviously now a lot of these are done via people's availability on like apps and things, aren't they?
Yeah. Suppose, yeah, yeah.
Back in those days, he's trying to give every child a game in the different squads, really. Is that, yeah?
I think for the sort of the first and seconds, obviously they had a proper selection process, but I think for the junior teams, they didn't really know who was available, if they turned up for training or whatever. And it was the Thursday and Friday where they actually slotted in the jigsaw and worked out who's actually going to play. But yeah, and obviously no mobile phones then. There was just a phone out in the kitchen somewhere, and it'll be just phone call after phone call after phone call. Yeah,
that's when you realize how hard it was then, really, isn't it? Because like with emails, it's even easier. But your dad then graduated, shall we say, then to the first team secretary in the 80s, didn't he? So he'd have been
That's right.
Heavily involved in the club administration. So what was his role then for the club?
I think was he first team secretary or something like that. I think it was a bit of a mix of things. He was also running the line as well, and a kind of team manager. So it's all kind of blurred into one. I can remember he also used to have to look after the kit as well. So the kit would be back in the back of the car. And we'd I'd accompany him to quite a few of the matches. So I get to look in a lot of the changing rooms in different clubs, and it was quite interesting. But I think he did a lot of everything, really. It was whatever needed to be done.
Like a true great volunteer of London Welsh past, really. But he would have been, our greatest day out really was at Twickenham, and he would have been in and around, the change room then. Where were you on that day in 85 then, when we're, playing the John Player Trophy final?
I was in a pub in the Kew Road. Probably shouldn't have been an age, I can't remember how old I was, but it was, and then we all obviously went to Twickenham in the stands and watched it. It was pretty entertaining game. I think it didn't look too good in the first half, and I think we came back. Was it 24 or something? I can't remember what the final score was, but yeah, I mean Bath had an excellent team, and they went on from strength to strength after that. But if you look at some of the players on the Welsh side, they're we had quite a few caps playing for London Welsh, Clive Rees and Ackerman and assorted players. So, no, it was pretty a good day out, that's for sure. And I've been to a couple of the other games previously on the way up in the John Player Cup, the Nottingham game, where I think it was Rob Andrew missed absolute shed full of goals, kicks. And Brian Moore was playing there as well. Yeah, so it was
that's funny,
interesting times.
Because obviously I interviewed Rob Ackerman and he didn't remember anything of that cup run. And you as a supporter, watching it, remembered much more than he did. But he was on the field of play. So I'm not sure that was to do with any head knocks or HIA or something.
Well,
maybe he's just he just doesn't remember the detail because he's had a great career for Wales and the Lions and, maybe the other games he's remembered. But look, your dad's been a great volunteer of the club, which is fantastic, right? And probably got your love of the club. So if you're living in Southeast London, was he coming to train on the Tuesday and Thursdays to London Welsh and then match days and then on Sunday mornings? What stage did you come to be in the minis and youth? I'm not sure the history of the minis and youth really generally.
Yeah, I think it was about 77. I've been under nine, I think, when I first started playing there. But you're right, he used to go to London Welsh four times a week then. I'm not quite sure how he managed that, especially driving from South East London. It was quite a trawl over there. Also he's teaching as well, so, and he teaches down in Dartford, so there's quite a bit of driving involved. It was 77, I think, was when I first turned up there.
What was the minis like back then? If you remember, because minis rugby is massive now. I'm trying to think what it was like. And there was less school rugby then, wasn't there? I imagine. So it's just, what about your club?
Yeah, it was much smaller. I think London Welsh led the way, really. I think in a mini rugby setup, because a lot of other clubs didn't have it at all. I mean, the games we used to have were generally involved going down the motorway, the M4 or M1, whatever, to various clubs. I don't remember playing local games against Richmond or Scottish. I mean, I guess we must have, but I don't remember that. And we obviously had the London Welsh Mini Rugby Tournament, which has been going for since then. It was a good setup, and there was a lot of good guys involved in the coaching there.
And was it Neil Kinnock was a coach at some point? Was he around when you were there, Barrel?
He was. He was in the year after, so the year below me. And I do remember because we trained after a certain age. We moved from training at Old Deer Park to Chiswick, which is the civil service ground, which I think we've been to a few times, haven't we? For next to the Chiswick ground that we play on Wednesdays, yeah. And I remember seeing him there. Well, obviously I remember seeing him, but I remember seeing TV cameras down there a couple of times on the Sunday, interviewing him. So I do remember him. that's for sure.
And then we also had like celebrity appearances in the 70s or 80s of Tom Jones turning up. Was he... That wasn't unusual, was it?
I don't remember him, to be honest. I remember the chatter about him to support the club. I can't say I ever saw him. But maybe a lot of people look like Tom Jones and the club, do they? You know, Steve Parsons, that kind of thing. You know, so maybe it was him.
It was a hot summer in 76 as well, so everyone would have had a suntan, wouldn't they?
Exactly, yeah. Curly black hair and, yeah.
Well, look, we digress. Look, you know, I think, you know, you moved through the minis and the youth, but, you know, what sort of standard of rugby were London Welsh playing at that time, you know? And did we have, like, a youth team for every age, or would we have, like, a couple of age groups together, you know? Were they good numbers?
They were good numbers. They had a team for every year up until the under 17s, I think, or something like that. And then it went into Colts. I mean, I was quite lucky. In the mini rugby team I played in, was really good. You know, I just turned up. I wasn't much of a player at all. I just, you know, enjoyed it. But the guys I played with, quite a few of them ended up playing for London Welsh first team from that age group in mini rugby, which is quite unusual. I mean, again, it's a smaller pond, wasn't it, compared to today? More people are playing rugby today, but people like probably guys you haven't heard of, John Walters, Michael Dawes, you might have heard of him, I don't know. Damien Griffiths, who played on the wing for London Welsh and Newport. We all played in the same mini rugby team, so again, quite fortunate.
I think a lot more children play rugby now. I don't think a lot more adults play rugby, though. I think less adults playing rugby. So still, there's some things, you know, there's something, you know, fundamental that's wrong with rugby. We get so many people introduced to the game now, but they don't stay with it due to, I suppose, other distractions or whatever it is. I don't know.
People working too hard, maybe. I don't know. You're right. I think people are almost playing their career out through their kids, aren't they? They sort of, like, you go play, but they haven't played. But yeah, as I said, going back to mini rugby, I was very, very lucky, really. And we had some great coaches there as well. Ray Griffiths, Colin Weeks, who was the manager, both of them characters. And later on, Gerald Davis, not the Gerald Davis, but another man, the same name, who played on the wing for London Welsh. So, some great coaching. And we used to have, like we do, we used to have visitors from the first team to come down. On a Sunday, certainly not as much as the guys do now, but we had Bruce Bradley and alike coming down, which was fantastic. Yeah, well,
that is great.
Kevin Bowring.
We definitely want more of that to happen with our, you know, our senior squads coming to help with the minis and youth. But, you know, we hear lots of Welsh mums and dads say they remember bringing their kids to ODP to play against our youth. So you must have had some pretty good fixtures against Welsh clubs back in the day as well, who'd come over to play London Welsh. Do you remember those at all?
Well, at a junior level?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do remember quite a lot of games. I mean, the one that stands out, when we moved to the Colts or that kind of age, again, we had a fantastic team with the same players I mentioned already, plus a few more. And one of the games that stands out, we actually played against Wales. We played against Welsh youth, which is bizarre. You wouldn't think you play against a national team. We did pretty well. I'm not making this up. I think we sort of lost 26-6 or something like that. David Young was playing tight end for them, so it was a pretty decent team. So that was the kind of standard that you know we had in our team as well. But yeah, we used to go on the road quite a bit to play games because there still wasn't that kind of build up of teams that we have today locally.
No, and you must have had some tours as well, though, because you know, I know the club went on a centenary Colts tour, didn't they? It's Canada in 86. So you'd have been probably around 17 at that time. How long was that tour to Canada? How did everyone get to go and afford to go? Or how did you raise money? You know, what was it like?
So you asked me that this in the notes, and the question I don't know. I don't know who to ask apart from Jaws, because he was on the same tour. I in my head, it was about maybe 10 days. It was certainly more than a week. Could have been 2 weeks. We must have had some fundraising. Can't remember. We were out in the Toronto area, and we stayed in York University for a bit. We Ben Johnson, the disgraced sprinter, that was his, where he was training then. I remember that. And we played various games around Toronto and Niagara, Mississauga. I think that's the first time I've been, I was going to say abroad. No, I've been abroad before, but only on rugby tours. So I've been, we've been to France and Yugoslavia with the Colts or the under 15s or whatever age. And then this obviously trip over to Canada was huge. And again, the same management involved Colin Weeks, Ray Griffiths, Gerald Davis, and I think Paul Miller came, who was then the Griffins coach. But no, it was fantastic. I mean, going to Canada then, it was like a completely different world. You know, the kind of the lifestyle they had out there compared to what we had. It was unbelievable. And the weather, obviously, was in the middle of the summer. It was fantastic. But as I mentioned before, I think that's when Matthew Charles, aka Jawsy, he was on that trip. And I don't remember meeting him before. I'm sure I must have, but he turned up on that trip and he's kind of been touring ever since, hasn't he?
Yeah, definitely. His life's one big tour, isn't it? But so how many, so this is Colts tour, so it's one team. So you take a squad of 20, 25 boys, is that what it is?
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be unheard of now, wouldn't it? Take a London Welsh youth team away for 10 days. It's a shame because it'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
I don't know how we afforded it, you know. I do remember something about the plane. It was like the oldest flying plane across the Atlantic because we had to stop in Reykjavik en route to Canada, which I don't think they do these days. But as you said, you know, cost-wise these days, you couldn't fathom it, could you? Really taking that many guys across. And we were hosted out as well, which obviously cut the costs. You stay with the opposition players and... It was fantastic. Yeah,
I really like the thought of that. But these days, those sort of things don't happen in terms of you stay with other families. I don't know whether because it's child protection or whatever it is. It just doesn't happen anymore.
No.
And you stay in hotels. But look, at the moment we had no tours whatsoever because of COVID. So any sort of tour it would be great. No. Never mind anything else. But look, so you leave the Colts and you start working. So you started as an apprentice engineer, didn't you, for a bit before you sort of got into IT?
Yeah, I was. I actually left school without going to the sixth form. I did an apprenticeship with the MOD in mechanical engineering, and then I went to college then to do an HND or something like that. I did it. I think it was a 4-year apprenticeship. And by the time I finished that, there weren't that many jobs in mechanical engineering. And I sort of chose the wrong path. I should have been doing electronics probably with hindsight. And yeah, I worked for a bit. I went away to Canada to play rugby. When I came back, I was looking for a job. And I think I was looking in a program before a match. I saw an advert by a firm, JHC Computing, you know, and obviously most of the guys who advertise in London Welsh, there's a connection. So I found out who it was through Nigel Connell and Bill Kerry Evans, who was obviously a great, great sponsor of the club. And I asked him, you know, could he give me a job? And he said, well, what do you know about IT? I said, well, nothing. He said, well, you start on Monday. it was literally that, and I thought, you know, I can't let this guy down. So I realised it was a chance, you know, to have a career. And but I mean, Bill, I'm not sure how well you know Bill, but he's an amazing guy. He's so generous with his time as well, and a real good guy. And yeah, he got me into my current career.
Yeah, because I've got a little story from somebody about you designed automatic train doors for a while, and your first attempt didn't go as planned, as they would have cut grannies in half or something.
That's come from Humps, isn't it? Yeah.
I can't reveal my source, Sparrow.
Yeah, that was one of my previous jobs in pneumatics. It was supposed to be a fail-safe door for trains. Yeah, the prototype wasn't too good. Yeah, it would have cut people in half.
No, I had to find a way to get that little story in. Don't worry, it's quite funny. But look, guess we're back to rugby anyway. Look, I think so what I'd like to understand is the transition to senior rugby, because you, as you said, you came through the junior system and Michael Dawes and a few of the great team. So how does a club like London Welsh get you going from the Colts? You know, and it's when you're a front row player, right? It's quite a big step going from front row Colts to front row adult rugby.
There is. I'd like to say there was a well-structured path from the Colts to the 20 and the 21s to the seniors. There didn't seem to be, although we did have a good setup in the Griffins. And I guess the idea was then you just feed in players to maybe, you know, the junior teams and build them up. It didn't really happen for me. I was trying to remember exactly when the first game was, but I got a call on, which I think was it's a New Year's Eve or New Year's Day on 1987, and they were short of people to go up for a game on New Year's Day to Nottingham.
Right,
that's bizarre, isn't it? Being short of players for that kind of thing. I can't believe it was New Year's Day, but it was around then, you know. And there were Druids team and short, did I want to play? And of course you don't turn that down, do you? And there were all sorts of waifs and strays they were putting out to play in that game. And then off we went on the bus. I think Porky Parsons and Nigel Reese were in attendance, you know, coaching. And it's become an infamous game because, you know, we went up there with just a nothing team against apparently a very good Nottingham second team, and we drew 13-13. It's gone down in history basically, as has the coach trip back. And I think I was talking to Martin Ryan about this, and I think the week after the Druids beat Bath second team, you know, so it was pretty good stuff. That was my first entry into senior rugby.
So the Druids then, was that like you're saying that's the third team, is it, for London Welsh then, or was it seconds?
Seconds, yeah, second Druids, team. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the following year, I thought you were in a pre-season, because you say, like, why would the club play on New Year's Day? But, like, I think on a pre-season tour to Devon, you were playing Plymouth on a Saturday and Torquay on a Sunday as a club, overall club. So you must have taken, like, about 40 or 50 players down, and you were assigned to play on the Sunday because you made your debut then in a friendly against Torquay. Do you remember that?
That's right. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, that was the pre-season trip. Yeah. I do. I remember. Was it Exeter as well?
I think it was Plymouth.
Plymouth. Yeah. Plymouth and Torquay. I remember the game. Yeah, and I remember Paul Turner was playing because they just sort of signed him up or whatever you do in those days. You don't sign people up, you give them some money or a job or something. But yeah. And that was my first trip, I guess, with the club.
So obviously in those times, so you get into senior rugby and you're playing for the different London Welsh sides. And again, I don't know how many sides London Welsh should have had at that time. Maybe three,
quite
four, five. You know, potentially in the '80s, which is great. But then, as a ambitious, you know, you're probably training Tuesdays and Thursdays. You're then looking to try and get into the first. So you make your debut for the first 15 in 1988. So only a year after your senior debut, it's at Franklin Gardens against Northampton.
Okay, that would have been their first league game, I think.
Yes, your first league game away. And obviously, your dad's still probably hanging around the first team volunteering loads. Must be quite a proud day, proud day for the family, because you know it would have been a big crowd probably at Northampton for that game.
I'd like to say I can remember it. I can't. I can remember my first couple of games actually in 87. They weren't league games, but as you've got in your notes there was a game against Met Police in the middle of the week, midweek game. And I think we'd had quite a few injuries, and the next game was Fleffley at home, because obviously we're still playing the big Welsh sides then. And the consensus was I would probably be picked again, you know, because short players. And Yestin Thomas, who was the coach at the time, he pulled me aside and said, look, I don't want to throw you in at deep end. We're going to put someone else in. I said, oh, okay then. The next week was Neath at home and he put me in against them, which, yeah, they had all sorts of internationals playing. So I can remember those games quite well.
So back in, so 88 then, if you played Neath, did Adrian Davis play then? Did you play against him?
He wasn't, yeah, I checked the programme. He wasn't in that game, but I think he was around Neath at that time. But, yeah, they had all sorts of people there, you know, Mark Jones, Lynn Jones. I think it could have been Roland playing as well. Yeah, I mean, and the Welsh All Blacks at the time were, you know, at that period of time, they were way ahead of what was going on. They were brilliant, yeah. I think also there was... I keep referring to non-league games, but we didn't play that many league games in a season. And we still had this sort of traditional fixtures, which kind of were almost more important, which is probably why we struggled a bit. And I think that season, Bridgend were the unbeaten Welsh leaders. And we went down, we beat Bridgend. I was on the bench, I didn't get on. Probably a good thing. But yeah, I mean, and then they beat Bridgend.
Wow,
quite a win.
It's great that those fixtures.
Mark Langley was playing that. I remember that.
Oh, God. So,
yeah, for Bridgend, yeah.
Because you'd have 12 league fixtures, I think, and then but you'd be playing like 30, 35 games a season. You know, it's madness, isn't it, really, to see how small the league was, really.
With hindsight, it was. And probably other clubs benefited from not having that fixture list, whereas... at the time, it would seem silly for us to drop fixtures like that against, you know, Cardiff and Fleetwood and Leicester's or whatever, just because that brought the crowds in. But I don't think it helped with the league.
No, you're right, actually, because I think, you know, during those years, so you played for the senior teams for 12 or 13 years. You've made over 190 appearances, right? That's just for the firsts. So, how many more games would you have played as a senior in the seconds or thirds, you know, during that time? Would it be another 100 or so?
I don't think I played for the thirds, but I think I played more games for the Druids than I probably played for the first. I probably played over 200.
Flipping. That's like 400 games for London Welsh. That's amazing. I don't think people would, you know, that you're helping coach now your lad at under 15s. None of those parents be aware, you know, of your stature in the club, really, when you've played so many games. seriously, I was like so chuffed to see all this, you know, when I was doing my background stuff on it. So look, you know, there's lots of sketchy records about playing appearances. I'm not going to go through every season because it's like, this is not about that. It's pulling out some of the great anecdotes you've had, but a lot of the records, you know, so the playing records, I think we were down to Courage 4 South in 89-90. And I said, they're a bit sketchy, but you started playing, we were in Courage 2. We dropped a couple of divisions and then we were in Courage 4 and then Courage 5 South for like 3 or 4 years until Clyde Griffiths came on board. But until then, though, you had like Bill Calcraft was sort of stabilised London Welsh at that level 5 or whatever it was. And yeah, you had John Dawes as playing controller and coach. So what was that like being coached by Dawes? Because I imagine John was coaching his son as well.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, Bill Calcraft had some good ideas. Obviously, he played for Australia at some point before, and he was quite sort of creative in his coaching. And obviously, John Dawes, you know, he was a great coach. I just think we struggled during that period with getting the right players in, probably. I think prior to that, London Welsh had always expected the players to turn up. And when we got put in, I think we got put directly into the Division 2 when the league started in 86, I think, which was, I think we were dealt a bad hand there because we were, the club were in the John Blake Cup final in 85,
yeah.
So that probably had an effect or did have an effect on the calibre of players turning up. And also, I think less players were coming down from Wales. House prices, whatever, you know, made it harder for people to come to London. And yeah, so I think We also had some, we lost a coach, Easton Thomas. I'm just looking at your notes here. He was 87, 88. Yeah. We went through a few coaches, that's for sure. Because I don't think John particularly wanted the coach. He was, you know, we were struggling. You know, we needed some help. And he stepped up to do that with Bill. And we managed to stabilise things. I think when you're in a bit of a spiral going down, it's quite hard to get out of it. You know, it's and to actually then play well enough to get promoted is even harder. So it took quite a while to get out of that spiral.
And so during those sort of seasons, you know, I don't want to call out every player and things like that, because there's so many players you'd have played with, but you know, your captains were like Julian Davis, who I know you're quite strong, you know, mates with, and Jeremy Evans, you know, Lee Thomas. Yep. These were your three captains during these times, you know, and I'm sure they were key characters as well. Yep. Around the club, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Graham Peacock, Andy Tucker. I probably where it all started to come back was, again, I'm looking at your notes here, was Five South. I think Five, the demotion or whatever from four to five, I think there was a restructuring as much as well. You know, they split the leagues up. Mike Gosling became playing controller. We had a couple of people coming back from various places. I'd been playing in Canada. Lee Thomas had been, I think he'd been deported to South Africa. So he had to wait to get back into the country. And Graham Peacock and what have you, and Andy Tucker had come back from playing in Australia. So there's a couple of things happened, and we kind of got the team back together. And I think that's when things started. Mike Gosling put a structure in that was probably been previously missing. We started playing better.
You mentioned Canada there. And so did you have a whole season playing in Canada? Or what were you doing over there? Was it to play rugby? Was it to do with your job? Or how did you
get... No, I'd been... I've been laid off doing this thing where I was pneumatic doors had cut people in half.
So you had a career break, they call it, yeah?
Career break. And Jeremy Evans, who you just mentioned there, club captain, he was out in Canada. He married and moved out to Canada. And you said, look, there's a good club scene out here if you fancy coming out. We'd toured in Canada in 89 as a club. And, you know, it's a fantastic place, Vancouver and Vancouver Island. So I knew what it was like. He said, look, here's a club in Vancouver Island. Come and see what you think. And I did. Vancouver Island, in my head, was a little island off the coast. It's about the length of England, you know, and an hour and a half's ferry ride from Vancouver. But, yeah, fantastic place. Great rugby. Well, hard rugby. It's not flash rugby. It's they consider a stand-up fight as fair game out there. It's kind of a ice hockey culture, you know. It's quite rough and ready.
But real man's game, sort of thing. So, yeah. But you were playing against a lot of the Canadian team who went on to beat Wales in '94. That's what, you know, I've sort of, you know, a lot of those guys went on to beat Wales. So
yeah, and a lot of the guys we're playing against have been in the 87 World Cup, and it was one guy who was playing with in our team. So you play against James Bay, and there'd be, you know, Norm Hadley had just left, I think he'd moved, but Mark Cardinal, who played for Canada. And also, yeah, and you talk about Canada beating Wales. Mark Williams, who's a London Welsh centre, who'd been out on tour with me to Canada in 89, he loved it so much, he went back to live there. So he was playing out there at the time for a club called Merrillomas in Vancouver, and playing for Canada. I don't know how he managed to play for Canada so quickly after moving out there, but and he was the fullback for Canada when they beat Wales. So, yeah.
No, quality. So you had a year there, but you come back and we're having this sort of renaissance, you know, sort of around, you know, 94 and 95. But, you know, we had a young Colin Chavis come to the club, and obviously we managed to interview him, you know, a few weeks ago. But you know, when he came to club, did you think, you know, there's someone who's going to play for Wales and be a Lions tourist?
No, but he knew something was special about him. He was so athletic. I mean, he literally run the length of the field. He was unbelievable and strong. And I think he came from, is it Southwest? West London Poly or something?
Yeah.
I think Glenn Richards had discovered him there. And I don't think he played much rugby. I think he was into mountain biking. That was his thing. And but it didn't take him long to get to grips with playing, you know, sort of senior rugby. Fantastic, yeah.
And there's a story, isn't there, I think, of you meeting him post a victory in Paris in a pub where you sort of take his shirt off, I think, in the middle of a pub in Paris, and it seemed to alarm a lot of the drinkers because they thought there's something, you know, like, some sort of fight was going to happen or something, but no one realised that you'd obviously played with Colin at London Welsh.
Someone's got a better memory than me. I don't remember at all that one. And I'm sorry, I can't add to that.
No. So it's okay. But, I think it's great.
But we did have quite a few trips to Paris at the time because one of my friends owned the bar there, which was quite helpful. So we used to go over quite a lot. And yeah, good times, that's for sure.
No, definitely. And you know, you talk about Michael Gosling, but I think he was there as a coach before Clive, wasn't he, I think? But you know, that sort of journey up the leagues, you know, you were probably in your mid-20s, you're consistently getting like 20 games a season across this period. Yeah. You know, as you mentioned, Andy Tucker, he was captain during this time. So it's like, you know, this is like, you know, you week in, week out playing first team rugby for London Welsh, you know, must be getting good crowds back then in the mid-90s.
Yeah, good crowds. It's fantastic. You couldn't fault it. I mean, it's kind of in the way we do today. I mean, we have big crowds today, really, but which is great. People just love the day out, don't they? You know, they're part of the sort of the London Welsh sort of family, as you want to say. And some real big crowds, and there was a lot of excitement given that the team were going up rather than down, which is always better, isn't it? You know. Promotions and things, and I think I remember the we toy in the corner when I think we had a game against Lydney where we needed to win. We didn't. I think we drew, but then Lydney then stuffed up, and then we managed to see the season out, and that was it. That's when we started going back up. But it's rugby at any level is hard, you know, and you think, oh, you know, you get demoted, it'd be an easier time, we can get back up, and there's always a team out there who want to beat you. You know, it's hard work. I mentioned Diddy; they were tough guys to beat. That's for sure.
No, and this is also the time then Kelvin started being involved with the club. And did you get a sense with him being there? There was a not changing of the guard, but things were changing for London Welsh. There was, you know, because obviously. This is amateur rugby. Rugby turns professional in 95. And so did how were you rewarded playing for London Welsh change a lot whilst you were playing for London Welsh?
Not really. I mean, I think we maybe got more subs than we used to do. You know, expenses and things. Maybe some money for the gym, which prior to then, we didn't have any gym to use. I do remember Kelvin coming in because previous to that was Vic Watkins, who was a lovely guy and a big sponsor of the club, and then handed over to the reins on that one. And yeah, it was, it grew really. Coming up to you're probably going to talk about, you know, the Clive era after this. People like, again, going back to Bill Kerry Evans, there was more, I guess, financial awareness in the club. There was more thought put to, you know, how do we get guys down? It's not just about maybe giving money. It's, you know, you've got to give someone a job and something to live, and the same problems you have today. You know, how do you find someone a job? You know, the jobs hub or whatever you want to call it.
You know, we're doing that now with Careers Hub, aren't we? London Welsh.
Careers Hub, sorry. Yeah.
That's okay. No, it's trying to exactly that. You know, look after them. But you know, so we went, even though we were signing players like at the stature of Roland, Andy Curry, Scott Roswell, you know, they'd have been part-time players, I suppose. They'd be on some sort of wage per game, but not everyone was on that then. In those
they
days,
were full-time players.
Right.
Yeah. Things were quite hard then because we had the full-time players and they were training morning and the evening as well. And then us lot were obviously working and then traveling, training in the evening. So it was hard. But yeah, the guys you mentioned there were full timers, that's for sure.
And did that, what's great, that like?
Great players as well.
Yeah, no, I've heard you know, yeah. I wasn't around the club then, but I've heard lots so much about, you know, this era, having talked spoke to Clive and Roland and, you know, and about the quality of players they had. But how does that dynamic work, though? You've got, like, full-time squad who are, you know, salaried, then you've got other people who are, you said, get expenses, you know, a bit of gym money and a few beers.
Yeah.
It must be quite challenging for a coach to bring that together.
You honestly, it wasn't so much the differential in the money. It was just the fact that you couldn't train together. They were training themselves in the day, and then they'd obviously done things together. Then we'd kind of pitch in. But Clive was single-minded. That's, you know, he was, right, this is a professional setup. We're throwing everything at it, you know, bringing in people like Roland and Scott Roskell and Andy Currier. I was just pleased to be playing with these guys. They were fantastic. I can remember quite a few games. I can remember a big win down in Worcester where Scott and Andy Currier were running riot. You know, we huge crowd down there. We beat them. That was fantastic. So no, it wasn't so much the money aspect. It was the training. You know, it was really hard training as well. I remember Clive had his sidekick Chaddy, who was this northern guy. He was the fitness guy, and he was awful. It was just. It's the hardest stuff I've ever done, and even guys that we knew who played professional rugby in, you know, the Quins and things like that, they'd heard of the training that was going on down here. I'm not sure how scientific it was, but it was hard. And obviously, Clive brought his own skills from rugby league. I think the biggest difference was probably defensive coaching or defensive alignment. I don't actually remember having been taught to tackle before that or thought about defence. I'm sure we did, but I just didn't register. And then where he was, you know, all the rugby league type tackles, you know, the tip tackles and all the kind of stuff that's banned. That's what he was coaching at the time and coming up as line and line speed and things like that. Things I'd never really thought about. And that was half of it, really. That was half of the beating these teams was defence.
Haven't been around, you know, the club for, you know, all your life, right? And then I'm playing first team rugby. We then going up from, like, I think level three, you know, when you played in most of the matches at level three, which has been, like, might have been called Deuce National One. We then go to Allied Dunbar Premiership Two. And obviously, you know, with professional rugby becomes, you know, more players, more contracts, more challenging to get into that team, Barrel. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You
know,
yeah.
So did you feel that sort of? It was harder to get that first team shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. And there were more players around as well. You know, Gary Holmes, you've got your notes there, Simon Ems, all these guys came in. So it was harder. It was more competitive. Andy Millwood, he went back to Neath, good player. Again, I'm quite happy. There's more than enough games to go around. I think in the end, I got fed up with being on the bench, going up to Doncaster and places every weekend. You know, it became a bit of a chore. It was great. It was a great experience.
So, you want to play, don't you? You just want to play rugby at the end of the day. You've worked all week. You've trained. Nowadays, subs always I'd get a game.
Exactly. I'd rather be playing for the Druids than, you know, being on the bench. Because the Druids, even then, you know, great team, hardly ever lost. Great fixture list against various clubs. It was almost another club within itself. The Druids. It was fantastic.
I think that's what we're looking for now, is to have like two, you know, the first and second at London Welsh to be as, you know, as really competitive and people going between both sides. Do you know what I mean? You know, and so we have that strength in depth. And obviously, we had it, you know, back then as we were playing, you know, what it is effect Championship rugby. Right, so we're the second team capable of doing that. So your last couple of years at London Welsh, is, you know, unless you were injured, was probably more playing Druids rugby because we were playing in level two. Yeah. Then I sort of found out you played it for Richmond as well. So because Richmond, post their sort of brief dalliance with the Premiership, they go down the leagues, and then Andy Cuthbert, who coaches his children or child in the minis at Richmond, you know, wants some experience to help Richmond go back up the leagues to mimic what we're doing now, really, in effect. So how did that conversation happen for you? Because obviously, a London Welsh boy through and through, Barrel, playing lots of game, adult rugby. Why did you feel the need to go to for a new challenge, shall we say?
Yeah, that's a good question. It wasn't really planned. As I said, I was getting fed up with being on the bench in far-flung places, and I played quite a few years. I probably just wanted to rest, so I kind of stopped playing for a bit. I think I probably got injured. And I knew Andy anyway. I think it was a conversation in a pub, as it were, you know. As you said, they'd had to restart from the very bottom, which is way down, and they'd been playing for a couple of years. And he said, give it a go, see what it's like. So I wasn't sure about it, but turned up, trained, and it immediately fell into it. It was great. You know, it was competitive, which is, that's what you want. And again, rugby at any level is hard. So it wasn't short of competition there, that's for sure. And it was good. I played two seasons. I think we got up to one below London One, somewhere around there, which it was a good standard of rugby. And Richmond, as you know, it's a great club, good ethos there, you know, they're doing all the right things. They've got the right guys running the club after it went bust. And they were putting the club first as opposed to some kind of scheme to go professional again, which is great. And there's been a lot of interaction anyway, in the years between Richmond and London Welsh, as you know, people like Luke Jones came over. Adrian Davis. So, no, they're a fantastic guy, and Cuff is great.
Yeah, look, you know, I've refereed the heavies a couple of years ago, and I think some of those players you were playing with then are still playing rugby.
They're still playing, yeah.
I know, they're in the Premiership for Richmond, and I was thinking, when you're refereeing a scrum, thinking, oh God, you know, especially at my level and how I referee, you start to worry, but they were good as gold, should we say. They just wanted to run around and a game of rugby, and so it's just great to see, isn't it?
I played a couple of games with the heavies. There's some amazing characters there. And I don't know how they're still playing. I mean, Cuff's still playing. I don't know how he does it. And they like touring, which is the best thing. I think the year before last, they went to Argentina. Hey, can you fathom that? An old boys trip to Argentina. Fantastic.
And how do they get that pass from the missus? That's the thing, isn't it? Never mind. But look, the heavies, they've got Heavies Foundation. They do a lot of great things there. It's a brilliant club, Richmond. You know, we love playing against them at, minis and youth level. But so is that the end of your rugby career then? Did you come back to London Welsh to play any Vets games there or Ockies? Or
no.
That was it?
No, that was it. I was convinced then that was it. There was no more to be had. Actually, just on that note about the heavies there, there's quite a few heavies that are actually London Welsh players. So Hugh Roberts and Neil Dark both played at first team level for London Welsh. They're playing, ended up at the heavies. I don't know why. So yeah, there's a lot of Welsh guys there.
I suppose once you're in the area, you just want to play rugby, don't you? And if that's the right place to play rugby, you play rugby there, you know. So, but yeah, I suppose you would never have left London Welsh. So you would have been part of a club called the Martini Club. What is this what is this Martini Club, and how does it work, Barrel?
How does it work? It's I think it's a creation of Julian Davis and Di Williams and Phil Park and those guys. Basically, it's a group of guys who are probably 10 years my senior, who I first played with when I was starting out. And then they stopped, and obviously they want an excuse to go away, so they created the Martini Club. Any place, any time, anywhere, is it the Martini?
it is, strapline, yeah.
And I wasn't a member at the time. I was still playing. And they were going on all these tours, mainly around the Five Nations. I think, did we go? We tried to emulate it. The youngsters, we had under the Martini under 21s, which we weren't under 21, obviously, but we went away to Hong Kong, the Hong Kong Sevens in 97. I think that was our only trip, really. And then after that, it kind of fell apart. The guys are sort of having kids and things and didn't think they could get away, whereas they were missing the point. This, the whole excuse was to go away. But there you go. So about 5 years ago, I an invitation to join, and been going ever since. So basically, it's a France or Ireland, really. That's the choice. So, you know, a weekend in Dublin to see the game, or in France, where they used to go to see the game, now they go somewhere else. So we went to Montpellier last time. Even when the game was in Paris, they go to Montpellier or Bordeaux or what have you. And it's, you know, it's a cultural trip away, basically, for 12 guys.
And when you go to France sometimes, you may want to join, like, the local Communist Party, mind you.
That's true, we did, yeah. It was cheap drink in the local Communist Party headquarters in Montpellier. Yeah, you've got good information there.
Oh, I love it. I love the whole that whole ethos. Look, I've got some stories now, and I want you to tell me if they're true or false. Okay, right. And you know, these have all been passed on to me, and this just shows how popular you are, Barrel, because the amount of stories we've got on you. Do you know what I mean? And that, really? That's to me. You know, it's not. You know, no. Honestly, I think it's great. So, you once scrummaged with Peter de Villiers in a bar in Paris.
That's true. He's a good player. I like Peter.
Playing your first senior match for the Druids, did you knock your opposition player out?
I don't think so.
Okay, that's all right. That's all right. False? No, I don't think so here, Barrel. It's true or false?
False, then, yeah.
On a Caribbean tour, did you apply mayonnaise to Mark Douglas's back instead of sunscreen?
True. He'd been pestering everyone for sunblock or whatever. And it was such a hot place, as you can imagine. And he was lying there, and then we just had sort of Caribbean chicken and jerk chicken or whatever, and there's mayonnaise sachets everywhere. So you put some on my back. So just lathered it in, and about, you know, 20 minutes later, his back was on fire. He's probably got skin cancer or something by now, but there you go. Sorry, Mark.
Third degree burns. Did you repeat this? Did you repeat this trick on someone's stag in Barcelona?
Did I what? Sorry.
Repeat this trick on someone's stag. Who stag do in Barcelona?
Yeah. Malcolm. Was it? I can't remember his name now. He's gone. Yeah, I did. True. Yeah.
Okay, that's all right. That's all right. It's fair enough. That's
Alan Samuels.
If we're ever on a youth tour together, Barrel. Okay. I know not to get sunscreen from you. I know that. Did you once have a beer with Prince Albert of Monaco in Dublin?
You know what? It's one of those, I'd like to say yes. I don't know if I was there or not. You know, it's one of those, is it the Martini Club story? And he was definitely there. I'm not sure if I was there, but yeah, that's right. Okay. He came in with his entourage.
No worries, yeah. You've obviously been a guest of Martin Ryan's cricket at Sapphire Gardens. Who was in the box with you that day?
Oh, the knight, Gareth Edwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ian Botham?
He came in. Yeah.
Graham Swan, they're all there. So
they all came in, yeah.
But you probably, your memory for recognising stars is probably quite poor. So you don't, you're not into all that sort of celebrity sort of culture. So did you once mistakenly kept saying to James Dean Bradfield, who was the lead singer of the Manics, that he was the lead singer of the Stereophonics?
Yes, true. Yeah. Yeah, that was at Martin Williams's testimonial dinner at Twickenham. Yeah, I made that little mistake. Yeah.
Look,
I mean, they're all guitarists in the end, aren't they?
Yeah, he sings a bit, doesn't he? Got a Welsh accent, doesn't he?
That's come from humps, yeah.
Well, look, it just shows, you know, through rugby, right, the great people you've met, the things you've done, things you've achieved, the mates you've made, and it's about the mates you've made. Like, look, and even now, look, you're keeping these connections going. I see you in a bar with, you know, Julian and Mark post the first team games. Your son's with his mates, usually doing ball boy stuff. You're now coaching the youth now. So how much are you enjoying that? Your son Jack's playing for the under-15s. You know, your Charlie's son, you know, Aidan Davis's son's there, my son. You enjoying that?
Surprisingly, yes. I didn't think I'd really sort of take to coaching. But it's been great. Really enjoyable. Just a pity about, obviously, this year. We lost this year completely, really. But yeah, great guys. And as you said, Charlie and Damien, and we give it our best shot. And then when we run out of ideas, obviously Adrian's on hand to pull something out of his magic book of coaching. It's great. No, I mean, it's a great bunch of kids as well. As I said, it's a pity about this year, because it's a long time to lose at this age, isn't it? I mean, 1 year out of rugby, really.
I'd love to think we can, in 10 years' time, just sit and watch them play adult rugby for London Welsh. You know, I don't care if it's first, seconds, thirds. They just get a little bit of what you've enjoyed and been part of. They get a bit of that, you know, with the club. It'd be unbelievable, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, and I think that's the main thing. Keep people involved in the game. Don't lose them. And I think probably now we've got a better sort of structure of doing that. You know, when people go away to university, the way they're keeping tabs on people, they're getting back and play rather than sort of lose. Because if you think back to the guys I played with, who were some brilliant guys, who I don't think they played after 21s or what have you. There was no real sort of structure to get them in. So I think hopefully that's something now we can look at and keep these guys involved. Because as you say, there's probably less people playing generally because of concerns about, you know, head injuries, that kind of stuff, concussions. But I've enjoyed it, especially the tours, more tours.
As I say, some great parents, you know, who volunteer and things like that. It's great. But you're still playing rugby. You're playing touch rugby, you know, within the club, and you recently turned out the Ready for Rugby event in December, which we'll have another one in April. So you must enjoy that because, there's some Colts playing and some, you know, it's a cross-section of the club playing, and it's just great fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I was stitched up really by you on that. I think I enjoy the Monday night fat boy touch rugby, and someone said, "Oh, what?" I think it was you. Why don't you give it a go? The Ready for Rugby tournament, and little did I know how fast it was going to be, and the first team players would be involved, and the Colts and stuff. But it was fantastic. It's great that they mix it all up. You know, you've got women and old guys, young guys. It was really good, and given there's not much else going on down in lockdown, is there? The fact that we could get two sort of tournaments running like that is fantastic. I think Rodri Dawes was so surprised he took a picture of me to show his old man because he didn't believe I was out playing. So
no, it's great. You know, that's the whole point of that. You know, is that, you know, it's not about winning. It's about everyone across the club playing together. You know, and it's a bit of fun. And so, you know, the fact that, you know, you're still playing, some of the other touch dads, first men, it's a great day. You know, even as a ref, like I love it. It's just, you know, you just have a smile on my face all day doing that. It's brilliant.
Unless someone runs into you.
Yeah. Because you get less of a Morgan Brown, the better, I think, on that front. look, London Welsh has been a massive part of your life, Barrel. It must mean the world to you and your family being part of that club. You know, when you reflect on your time, you know, what does London Welsh mean to you?
I just feel I'm lucky. I'm lucky to be part of that club that has so many people involved. You know, you can go down there any time, you know, even if you haven't, you know, arranged to meet someone. You know, if you go down there to watch a game or something, you'll meet someone who you know you can have a chat with. It's fantastic, you know. And the fact that I can bring Jack down as well, and he loves it. He probably loves the being with his mates more than actually the game itself, you know, which doesn't matter. That's part of it, isn't it? You know, and no, it's fantastic. Nikki likes going there now. I wouldn't say it'd be her number one place to hang out that often, but she realises what a great place it is, and the number of friends I got through it, and that's the main thing, really. It's less about the actual sport, isn't it? More about the social aspect.
Yeah, and that's what we've missed, isn't it? You know, the last year, you know, it's just, rugby delivers friendships, isn't it, really? And great experiences, do you know what I mean? And maybe the odd pint or two, eh? So anyway, look, you know, thanks for your time today. I've really, really, really enjoyed catching up with you and learning so much about your playing career at London Welsh. Look, I look forward to having a beer with you at the bar soon, Barrel. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you, Gav. Thanks a lot. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.